Well, I want to just pause for a moment and just celebrate that it's actually been 9 short weeks since we've been regathered as a church. And in that time frame, we've seen 609 people decide to follow Jesus and be obedient with baptism. Can we just celebrate with God's moving in our midst? So good. If you're new to CCV, we are just so glad you're here. You know, many of you know a little bit of my story because I've told it before, but a really big part of my life story is the journey that God took me on to becoming a pastor, and it was a little bit of a different journey. What happened was I went to Bible college, and when I graduated, I did not feel at the time God's leading or calling to go be a pastor in a church. So God took me on this journey through the business world. I spent about 10 years in the business world, and it was during that time that I felt God's specific call to go spend the rest of my life serving and leading in the local church. And when I felt God call me into the local church, I thought, God, did I miss something back there? Like when I graduated Bible college, was I sinning? Was I doing something wrong, you know? What did I miss? And as I began praying through it and really just seeking God on it, I really feel like he gave me a really clear answer. And he said, Ashley, you didn't miss a thing. In fact, I took you to Bible college to learn the Bible, and I took you on a journey through the business world to learn leadership. See, the company that I had the privilege of working for at the time, the Intel Corporation, was really an industry leader in developing leaders. And I am so indebted to them to this day, to what they did to invest in me as a leader. Some of the best leaders I know in the world today still are at that company. Many of them attend our Chandler and East Valley campus. That's where Intel's located in Phoenix, their location here, but they're located all across the world. But I really believe that's what God did with me. And that's why I've been so passionate about just this series that we're going to start off today called Lead Like Jesus, really talking about leadership. Because, you know, some of you might ask, well, couldn't have God taken you to a church to learn leadership? And the answer is he could. But the reality is this, and this is just the reality, most churches are not great at developing leaders. And here at CCV, we have to be great at developing leaders, because how many of you know that when you look around our world today, what our world needs more than ever is we need great leadership. Does anybody else feel that besides me? We need leadership today. We really, really do. And so what I have found, both working as a leader in the business world and as a leader in the church for a long time now, is this. I believe this with everything inside of me. Followers of Jesus should be the best leaders on the planet. Why is that true? Why would that be true? Because Jesus is the greatest leadership model of all time. He is. And if you're not a follower of Jesus here today, that might raise some eyebrows. You're going like, are you kidding me? Jesus is the greatest leader of all time? He is, and I'll prove it to you. Let me just ask for all, on every campus, just play along. Raise your hand if you're a leader here today. Are you a leader? Just raise your hand. Just raise it high. Be proud. Now listen, some of you didn't raise your hands. And the reason why is because we believe that leadership is a position, a title, or somewhere on the org chart. But what is leadership? I mean, just think with me a minute. Like at its very essence, what is leadership? How would you define it? It is not a position, it is not a title, it's not on the org chart. Here's leadership at its very core. Leadership is influence, plain and simple, which means every single one of you here today is a leader, because everyone has influence. Some of us have more influence than others, but every person has influence. So if you're a single mom or a single dad here today and you didn't want to quite raise your hand, are you kidding me? You have more influence over those kids than you could ever imagine. If you're a teenager here today and you were like, well, I'm not really a leader. Yes, you have leadership and influence over the people around you. If you're a grandparent here today and you're going, well, you know, I used to be a leader, but now I'm retired. No, no. Do you understand the next generation is looking more to their grandparents than ever to navigate some of the choppy waters ahead? Every single person has influence. And if leadership is influence, which it is, no one has influenced our world more than Jesus. And I would argue there's not even a close second. I'll give you a few examples. The whole entire world today keeps track of time based on BC and AD. What does that mean? BC means before Christ, and AD means Anno Domini, the year of our Lord. So why does the whole entire world consider it the year 2020? The whole world. Because it's 2,020 years after the birth of one person, Jesus. What are the two most important and most celebrated holidays across the whole entire world? What are the two most celebrated holidays? Christmas and Easter. The birth of one man, Jesus, and the death and resurrection of one man, Jesus. And I could go on and on about the influence of Jesus over Jesus and his pull of people to see who Jesus was and want to start hospitals and nonprofits, and how the teachings of Jesus have influenced our legal systems and legal systems all across the world. And I could go on and on and on. But I think John Ortberg put it best. He said this. Imagine you lived 2,000 years ago and you were a gambling man, gambling woman. Not all of you are, but just imagine you're a gambler. And you had to put money down on who would have more lasting influence. The Roman Empire, who controlled the entire world at that time, or a little Jewish carpenter with 12 inexperienced followers. Isn't it interesting that here we are 2,000 years later, and we still name our kids after Jesus and his followers? Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Sarah, Mary, Martha. And we name our cats and dogs Nero and Caesar. Listen, no one has influenced the world like Jesus. So maybe, just maybe, it's time that when we want to talk about leadership and what good leadership looks like, maybe we should stop looking to, well, the world's models, and maybe we should get back to the greatest leader of all time. And that's what we're going to do in this series for 5 weeks called Lead Like Jesus. We are going to look at the leadership principles of the greatest leader of all time. And I promise you, I don't care what influence you have today, whether you're influence over friends or your influence over your family or your influence over a sports team or you have influence over 10 employees or 100 employees or you have 1,000 employees, I promise you, you'll be a better leader at the end of this series. And what we're going to do is we're going to look at 5 things. We're going to look at the heart of a leader, the head of a leader, the hands of a leader, the habits of a leader, and the legacy of a leader. And today, I want to start by looking at the heart of a leader. Proverbs 4:23 puts it this way. Above all else, in other words, there is nothing more important in your life. Guard your what? Guard your heart. The most important thing for you to do is to guard and pay attention to your heart. Why? Because everything, think about how significant this is, everything you do flows from what's in your heart. So when we talk about leadership, we have to start with the heart of a leader. What's in your heart? What's your why? What's your motivation for leading? When I started thinking about this week, I thought, I started counting it up, and I know I have been in over 250 leadership courses, trainings, classes. I know it. And when I went to Intel, they sent me and paid for me to go get my MBA to develop me as a leader. I came back. They sent me to week-long leadership intensive training classes. Since then, I've gone to countless leadership conferences, seminars. I've read countless books on leadership. And in my experience, almost everything that we do, that we train people on leadership today, most of the world's training on leadership deals with 2 things, what to do as a leader and how you should do it. This is where we focus. Very few trainings ever deal with the why or your heart, your motivation behind why you want to lead in the first place. And it's a huge mistake because we covered this back in the Atomic Series, Habits Series in January. If you don't start with why, your how and do will always be messed up. So let me ask, what is your motivation? What is in your heart for even wanting to lead? If you boil every motivation down, there's only 2 motivations. There's really 2 motivations to lead. And Patrick Lencioni, I think, has done the best work describing this in his work. But basically, the 2 motivations for leading are this. One is called responsibility-based leadership, and the other is rewards-based leadership. And you have one of these 2 in your heart, and it's going to lead and motivate you in all of your leadership. Let me explain the 2. Responsibility-based leadership says this. You feel it's your responsibility to serve and care for the people that you lead, whether that's your kids, a sports team, whether that's your employees, your friends. You want to serve them. Rewards-based leadership says this: you want to be rewarded by the perks and power of leading. You want a bigger salary. You want a bigger place on the org chart. You want people to serve you, to notice you. Like, look at that guy. He's important. Wow. Look at her. Look what they can do. I mean, they're just so... You want the rewards that you think come with leadership. Or you want some fun, right? Today you're going like, I don't like all the menial stuff I have to do. So I want to jump up the org chart so I can do what only I want to do, what I want to do, and give all the junk to everyone else. So it'll be super fun up here. Which, by the way, it's not that way. I promise you when you get up there, okay? So, but these are the two really basic motivations. Now, when we think about Jesus as the ultimate leadership model, which one of these did Jesus model for us? It's not even close. Everything Jesus did was leading out of a heart to serve others. Nothing he did was for the rewards for himself. Nothing. So what I want to show you today as we talk about the heart of a leader is this. When you bend down to serve and your motivation is to serve, God can lift you up to lead. When you become a servant leader, that is when you become a true, true leader people want to follow. And there may be no better passage in Scripture to look at the philosophy and the leadership style of Jesus than what he describes in Matthew chapter 20. If you have a Bible, you can open there. I'll have the verses all on the screens as well. But in Matthew chapter 20, what's going on is Jesus is at the very tail end of his life, and he's going to die. And he's been trying to develop these 12, people around him so that they can take on the leadership mantle when he dies and go transform the world with his power and his spirit in them. And so he keeps trying to develop in them this heart of being a servant, to be a servant leader, and they're not getting it. In fact, they're following Jesus because they think Jesus is going to become an earthly king with all sorts of riches and power, and they're all jockeying for the top positions on the org chart when Jesus gets into his kingdom. That's what they're all jockeying for. And it's just comical how they're not getting it. In fact, in Matthew chapter 20, Jesus just tells his disciples for a third time he's going to die. He's gonna, guys, my heart is to serve, and I'm going to lay down my life for everybody. And they don't believe it at all. They don't get it. So two of his disciples show up, James and John, and they start jockeying for the top two positions on the org chart. That's literally what they come to ask. And it's kind of funny because when they come to ask, they bring their mommy. They brought their mom, which means what? Most theologians believe that means James and John were probably millennials. Okay. Yeah. I'm kidding. Listen, if you're a millennial, we believe in you. I believe in you. I think millennials may be some of the best leaders we have in the future. I really believe that. But listen to what happens, okay? Here's to Matthew chapter 20, verse 20. Come back with me. Then the mother of Zebedee's sons, that's James and John's mommy, came to Jesus with her sons, and kneeling down, she says, Jesus, I have a favor to ask of you. I mean, she probably said it really nice. Like, I just have a little favor to ask. Jesus kind of sees through, and he goes, what do you want? Okay, what is it that you want? And she says, I want you to grant one of these two sons of mine that they may sit at your right and you're left in your kingdom. Like when you get big and powerful and rich, I want one of them to be number one and one of them to be number two. Why? Because they're reward-centered leaders. They just want the rewards of everything Jesus can give them, more riches, more power. And by the way, the mom wants it too, because in a patriarchal society, if the sons are elevated, the mom's automatically elevated as well. And Jesus goes on, he begins to describe to them, you don't know what you're asking. Because at the end of Jesus' life, who ended up on his right and who ended up on his left? Two people on a cross. But they say, no, we want it. Oh, Jesus, we can handle it. He goes, are you sure? We can handle it. Give us number one and give us number two, baby. And then what happens next is pretty comical. It says, when the other 10 heard about this, that two were jockeying for the top two positions, they were indignant, which means they were incredibly angry at the two brothers. Why were they angry? Because they wanted to ask first. They wanted the same thing. So they're ticked. Now, everybody's ticked. Everybody's a reward-centered leader. Everybody's jockeying for power and give me more money and riches and rewards. And Jesus sees all this, and he literally, in that moment, he calls a timeout and has a leadership conference. It's what he does. And at this leadership conference, Jesus tells us the heart of a true leader. Listen to what Jesus says. Jesus called them all together. Guys, we're having a leadership conference right now. And he said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them and their high officials exercise authority over them. What's Jesus saying? He says, guys, you know. And so the rulers of the Gentiles, that just means the Roman rulers at the time. And you can go read the history books for yourself, but in the Roman Empire, every leader from the Caesars to the magistrates to the governors to the Senate, every leader led one way. They were a reward-centered leader. They built up their power so they could have more riches and rewards so they could push everybody else down to get what they wanted. It was all about them. And Jesus said, you know this. And the guys are going like, well, yeah, what do you think we want, Jesus? And Jesus uses two interesting words. I just want you to grasp this. He says to lord it over and to exercise authority, which are two compound Greek words that both start with the same word, the word kata, which means to put down. Jesus says, you know that all the leaders around you put everybody else down to build themselves up so they can get what they want. It's a reward-centered style. And the guys are like, yeah, Jesus, we want more of that. And the next four words out of Jesus' mouth are four words I think every leader should memorize. Jesus says this, not so with you. Not so with you. I don't want you to ever have a motivation in your heart to lead where it's all about you. And then Jesus gives us the alternative model to leadership. He says instead, because there's a better way, whoever wants to be great, which is the word megas, which means to be significant and important, whoever wants to be great among you must be what? Say it loud with me. To be what? What is it?
A servant.
And whoever wants to be first must be your slave. Two words, one of them easier to accept than the other one. Jesus says, you want to be a great leader? It starts with two things. One is to be a servant. What's being a servant? It's someone focused on doing things for others rather than for oneself. And I think all of us, I mean, I read that and I think like, I know I can be a better servant leader. I know I can. I've got some work to do. And I think all of us would probably say, you know, I probably have some work to do. But then Jesus uses a second word that I think is harder to accept. I want you to be a slave. And some of us would say, well, I'll serve, but I'm a slave to no one. Really? I mean, think about what the word slave means. Slave means someone bound to obey their master's commands and teachings. If you're a follower of Jesus here today, and if you're not, you're off the hook. But if you are you bound? Are you bound to obey anyone's commands and teachings? You better believe you are. You're bound to obey the commands and teachings of Jesus. And Jesus, talking about leadership, says, servant leadership is not a suggestion, it's a mandate. It is a mandate, which means if you lead for any reason other than to serve others, you will never be a great leader, ever. Why? Because it's impossible to lead like Jesus, to influence like Jesus, if you won't serve like Jesus. He gave us the model. And he didn't just give us the model, he lived it out. Listen to the very next thing he told his disciples. Not so with you. Just as, I want you to serve just as the Son of Man, that's he's talking about himself, did not come to be served, but to serve. Guys, when you've watched my whole entire life that I've been with you, he's talking to them and he's talking to us, is there anything about my life that made you think I've been doing this for the rewards? No, I've been doing this to serve. I didn't come to be served, I came to serve. And in fact, I came to eventually give my life as a ransom for many. I want you to think about the people in your life that have influenced you the most. Who's had the greatest impact on you? Here's my guess. It's someone that served you. It could have been a parent that every day, you know this, they laid down their life for you. That's me. For some of you, it's someone at work that gave you an opportunity when no one else was giving you opportunities. And you are where you are today because of that person who was serving you and for you. For many of you, it was a coach that spent extra time with you and saw something in you and they really, really invested in you. Many of you, it was a teacher. Everybody else said, they're a loser. Don't even give them a shot. They'll amount to nothing. And you had a teacher that poured into you and spent extra time with you. Not for them. They did it to serve you. Don't you want to be that kind of leader? Of course you do. And I do too. But how would we know? How would we know it, what's inside our hearts? Like, am I a reward-centered leader or am I a servant leader? I think there's three markers. I want to give you these three markers to wrestle with. Here's marker number one to whether you're a servant leader or a reward-centered leader. Servant leaders are always trying to make other people look good. And reward-centered leaders don't want others to look good, only themselves. You ever been around leaders that they're all about just building them up? They never build you up. No, servant leaders are always building up the people around them. In fact, some leaders want to make you think they're great. Great leaders make you feel like you're great. That's a servant leader. Here's marker number two. Servant leaders find their approval in one place, God. Reward-centered leaders believe that their self-worth equals my performance plus the approval of others. Now think about this deeply for a moment. If you're a reward-centered leader and you believe that your self-worth is your performance plus the approval of others, you will always make it about you. If you've made up in your mind where your self-worth comes from, that it comes from God, you'll easily dish out serving and lifting other people up. And plus, I mean, think about it this way. How many of you know that your performance isn't great every day? Is there anybody else like me? You're like, my performance today stunk. And how many of you know that the approval of others, it's pretty fickle? I mean, people can love you one day and hate you the next day. I mean, man, for me, could you imagine if I based all my self-worth on your approval? I mean, for some of you, I'm only as good as my last message, right? I mean, my last message was good. You're like, I love this church. This is awesome. You know, my last message, you're like, wasn't so good. You're like, I don't know about this place anymore. You know, I mean, could you imagine? You have to decide where are you going to find your self-worth. And if you find your self-worth in the approval of others and your performance, it'll always be about you. So we have to decide, who are we serving? Where do we find our approval? It's like the opera singer that I read about recently. He was one of the best opera singers in the world, and he did a performance that many believe was one of his best performances of all time. He sold out this huge opera house, and at the end, everybody gave him a standing ovation. They were just clapping like crazy. Everybody stood up, except for one person on the front row. And when this opera singer walked off stage, his manager grabbed him and said, that was one of the best performances you've ever had. And he said, no, it wasn't. It was terrible. He said, how can you say that? Everybody stood to their feet. He said, not one person on the front row. He goes, who cares about that one guy? And he said, that one guy was my teacher. What he knew is he was going for an audience of one. And as a follower of Jesus, you have to live your life for an audience of one. I have to live my life for an audience that I'm not trying to approve your approval. I'm not looking for anyone's approval. I'm looking for the approval of God and God alone. That's what will help you be a servant leader. Here's marker number three. Servant leaders love hard or negative feedback because it allows them to improve for the benefit of others. Reward-centered leaders despise hard and negative feedback because it's all about them. Servant leaders love the hard stuff. Hey, give me the hard stuff because they want to improve so they can serve others. Reward-centered leaders hate hard feedback. They don't want to ever hear it. You ever been around people that are like, you start to give them some constructive or hard feedback and they're like, I don't want to hear it because it's all about them. You have to wrestle with these three things. I have to wrestle with these three things. And there's a wrestling to really see where are we at. And if you want to know the two things that will always fight against you to be a servant leader, these are the two things. One is pride and one is fear. And we understand pride because we know, pride says I'm thinking about myself too much. So the answer is to lead more humbly, you know, to have humility. And humility is not thinking of yourself less. It's just thinking about yourself less and thinking about others more. But fear is the sneaky one. Because you say, well, how does fear make me a reward-centered leader? I'll show you. See, when things around you get a little unsettled, let's say you're at a company and there's rumors of maybe there's going to be a layoff or maybe the company's not doing so well, and you're getting a little afraid, because and when you get a little fearful, you know what happens? You immediately turn inward sometimes. Oh, I'm going to make it all about me. I got to protect number one, and you stop serving others. So when it comes to fear, you have to decide, where am I putting my trust? And trust me, listen to me, God controls your future and your employment more than you do. So you got to keep putting your trust in God. I'm going to keep serving others and just understanding that God can take care of me more than anyone around here can take care of me. That's why I love this verse in Proverbs. It says, the fear of human opinion disables. If you're all about human opinion, it'll crater you. But trusting in God protects you from that. When you put your trust in God and say, God, you control my job, you control my employment, that will continue to allow you to be a servant leader. So let me ask you a $1 million question. What are you? You a reward-centered leader? You kind of in it for you and the more money and more stuff? Are you truly a servant leader? And as I started thinking about this, there was one person at our church that kept coming into mind that I sat down with this past week. I've known her for over a decade, and she's led at a higher level than almost anyone I know in our church. And yet she is one of the greatest servant leaders I've ever met. And I want you to hear Mary Peter's story. Mary, thank you for coming in. We've known each other for a little while now, but our church does not know who Mary Peters is. So just maybe give us an introduction.
Sure. Well, Mary Peters was born and raised right here in the greater Phoenix area. And I've just been blessed with many opportunities as I've gone through my life and my career.
So you served as the Secretary of Transportation for the United States government.
Yes.
over all transportation in the whole United States.
Yes.
It's one of the few positions that reports directly to the president. You've led at one of the highest levels. What have you learned about leadership?
Well, I think when you go to DC and you go into a position like that, by and large, the staff that you work with are what they call career employees, or they've been there. And there was a thing, if you don't work with them, you're not going to get anything done. Mm. And servant leadership is what really opened the door, I think, with the career employees to be able to get us to work together to accomplish objectives and make sure things happen. And you have to be a servant leader to do that. If you come in with command and control, you're not getting anything done. In fact, the staff will call you the weebies, meaning we be here, wouldn't you be gone?
So, wow.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people assume that when you get into high levels of leadership, that you need to be this like commanding, domineering, everybody works for you, so
yeah.
You're this demanding leader. But you'd say you've seen the opposite. It's more effective to lead by serving others.
It is.
Man, tell me more about that.
I would always say that that I was privileged to lead. That was a great privilege to lead people.
Wow.
But one of the things, and you've talked about this recently too, is defining true north. Where do we want to go? What do we want to accomplish together? So that you can get everybody on the same path, if you will, to get us where we're going. If you, as a leader, don't provide that true north and communicate that through the organization, very well-meaning people will just maybe their hair off. They're just a measure off. But you're going to end up in very different places at the end of the day. Now, you could do that with a command and control leadership, but if you do, it's only going to be while they're watching you.
Wow.
It's not going to be forever.
Mary, talk to me a little bit, because you've been around so many good leaders. You've probably been around some people in really high leadership levels that were not good leaders. How does this idea of ego, or you need to serve me, how have you seen that backfire on people?
And I have seen that. You know, sometimes someone gets in a position, even like a governor or a senator or something like that, and they feel entitled. They say to themselves, I worked hard to get here. I've done all this. I deserve this position, and I'm not going to let anybody get in my way of doing things. And those are never successful. They really are never successful. And often these leaders fall with them. They may take others in the organization with them, but they fall from grace, even in the political world that they have created. And command and control leadership just doesn't get the richness that you want from the workforce and from everyone there. So I've seen some big people fall who took that kind of position.
Yeah. How have you seen, I mean, over, you know, a lot of years of leading, how have you seen your heart sometimes gravitate away from that being that servant leader? Because it seems like sometimes that your heart doesn't gravitate towards it. You have to keep reminding yourself that this is who I am.
Yes.
I'm a servant, right? I'm a servant.
Yes.
Like, have you seen your heart? You having to realign your heart throughout the years at all?
I think one of the things that I've noticed with myself and others as well is, I'm going to be a servant leader here at this, at this family or something like that. But when I go to church, but when I go to work, that's another story. That's not who I am. And you have to, what are your Christian values? What do you as a Christian want to emulate and really teach other people to be? So you can't let yourself go away.
It's so good what you said, that I think sometimes we compartmentalize servant leadership. Like I'll serve on the weekends at church 1 hour, but then when I go to work, no, I'm not a servant here, but Jesus says serving isn't something you do, it's who you are.
Yes, it's so important. And, families depend on that. And I tell people, all of you are a leader in some aspect or another. Mm. And if we truly want to adhere to our Christian values and follow Jesus' lead, then we need to do that no matter where we are.
Well, Mary, there's not a lot of people that would know this, but tell me about where you serve around here at CCV.
I serve in the 2-year-old classroom.
Wait a second. You led at the highest levels of leadership, and yet you're gonna serve with 2-year-olds, maybe one of the hardest areas to serve in the entire church. Tell me about that. Tell me how that came about.
I think a lot of things that people say, that if you do this, you're going to make a sacrifice, you're going to do this or that. No, this is such a Christian opportunity to really get to know and see these kids and love them and make the parents comfortable when they come and drop that kid off and that little one may be crying and screaming and doesn't want to get in there, and you got to stay with him. But it makes your heart good. It just makes your heart feel good that you're doing what you need to be doing to help everyone at this church.
Yeah. I just want to look you in the eyes, and I just want to say, you inspire me. You like make me want to be a better leader, because I see your leadership, and you're a leader of leaders, and yet you're one of the most servant-hearted people I've ever met in my life, and I'm just glad you're a part of our church.
I am too.
So I just hope your story inspires all of us to get off the sidelines and become a servant in every area of our lives.
Yeah. Don't play church. Be a Christian.
Wow. Well, thank you for taking some time with us.
My privilege. Thank you.
Wow. Just so inspiring. Mary she really does inspire me. And by the way, Mary's still leading in really, really high levels. Right now, she's one of the lead consultants on a bullet train that they're trying to get developed between Washington, D.C. and New York that will run in 1 hour. And it's going to be incredible. I hope it goes through. But what you will find, and I've known Mary for a long time, what you'll find is serving is not something that Mary does. It's who she is. She made a decision a long time ago that her motive for leading is to be a servant. And that's why she's so effective at what she does. And even today, she would never tell you this, but just recently she adopted her 4 grandkids. 4 girls, ages 14, 10, 8, and 6, because their parents had got addicted to some really bad drugs and were really struggling. So Mary adopted her grandkids because she is a servant. And one of the things she said that really convicted me as I just look at my own life is it's so easy to compartmentalize our servant's heart. Well, I'll serve here, but in this environment. And for me, I would say for me, I want to pour my heart out to this church. I want to serve this church. And it's easy for me sometimes to go home and say, well, my wife and kids, it's time for you to serve me. But I need to be reminded that I'm a servant. It's not what I do, it's who I am. And the only way to be a great leader, the only way to lead like Jesus, is to have a heart of a servant. And that's why, remember, when you bend down to serve, God can lift you up to lead. But the opposite's true as well. If you won't bend down to serve, God may see fit to straighten you out. I'm telling you, some of you are like, but I see a lot of reward center leaders going really high. Yeah, they can go high for a period of time, but I promise you, the Bible shows this, history shows this, the most prideful and egotistical leaders always have the hardest falls. And you know it. So we have to decide, as followers of Jesus, that if we want to have lasting influence, if we want to see our world transformed, our families transformed, our marriages, our sports teams, every area of life, if we want to see them transformed, it starts when we lead with a servant's heart. Because remember, you can't lead like Jesus until you serve like Jesus. So what's our challenge for today? Very specific challenge for you. I want you to answer this question. What's one specific way you can start serving others on a regular basis, starting this week, to develop that heart of a servant? And it might be for you, it might be in your workplace. You might say, you know what, I've not been serving the people in the workplace. I've kind of made it about me. And me moving up the org chart and me getting more power. It might be in your home. You might say, I need to really start serving my family more. I know I serve other people. I don't serve my family very well. It could be here at church. You know that at CCV, you've kind of been on the sidelines, and it's time for you to step up and serve. And you've made excuses, I'm too busy. No, it's who you are. You're a servant. And we need everybody to serve around here to make a difference in our valley. I don't know what it is for you, but I have a feeling that God today is speaking to a lot of us. He's speaking to me. And he's trying to get a hold of our hearts the same way he did his disciples in Matthew chapter 20 and saying, listen to me. I've given you the model. And if you want to lead like me, you need to serve like me. So I want to pray that all of us would go out and have that kind of heart. Can we pray that together? Father, I thank you that you gave us such a great manual on leadership, the Bible. It's so full of the richness of how to actually lead for lasting influence. And God, we have a lot of models. There's a lot of classes and training courses out there on leadership, and yet Jesus is the greatest model of all time. And so I pray as we go through this series that you would get a hold of all of our hearts, that we would start leading like Jesus, so our families and our marriages, our city, our workplaces, we could see actual transformation. Because God, we want that in our world. All of us want it, we feel it. But the only way it's gonna happen is when followers of Jesus step up to serve. God, would we be that kind of church and would we be that kind of people? In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Hey, it's been so good being with you. Right now, I want to hand it over to your host or campus pastor right now. Can you welcome them to the stage right now? Would you welcome them?